Raphael's father dried his mouth. Maybe he should see to setting up the camp. A letter sent to Lord Bashir could explain everything. A carefully composed letter might take 2 or 3 days to write, maybe more. He was no hand with words. A glimpse of the crimson banner waving lazily above the royal palace brought him back with a thump. The rumors had spoken of that. Perrin knew it was not the dragon banner, whatever the rumors said. Some claimed it meant the Aes Sedai served Rand, others that he served them. And he wondered why Rand was not flying the dragon banner itself. Rand. He could still feel Rand pulling at him, Greater Taviren tugging at Lesser. It did not tell him where Rand was. It was not that kind of pull. He had left the Two Rivers expecting to ride to Tyr, or maybe the light alone knew where, and only a river of rumors and tales flowing west across Andor had brought him here. Some very disturbing tales and rumors. No, what he felt was more a need to be near Rand, or maybe Rand's need for him, like an itch between his shoulders he could not scratch. Now it was close to being scratched, and he almost wished it was not. He had a dream, one that Fael would laugh at, adventurous as she was. He dreamed of living in a small house with her, somewhere in the country, far from cities and strife. There was always strife around Rand. But Rand needed him, and he would do what he had to. In a great column-ringed courtyard overlooked by marble balconies and pointed spires, Perrin slung his belt, weighted by his axe, on the saddle. It was a relief to be rid of it for a while, and a white-robed man and woman took stepper and swallow. With a few words, Barada turned Fael and him over to cold-eyed Aielman, many wearing scarlet headbands marked with the black and white disc, who led them inside, and with even fewer words handed them to maidens who were just as frosty. Perrin did not recognize any of them from the stone, and his efforts at making conversation were met with blank looks. Their hands flashed maiden hand talk, and one was chosen out to take him and Fael deeper into the palace, a lean, sandy-haired woman he thought might be about Fael's age. She named herself Larian, the only words she spoke, except to warn them not to wander. He wished Bane or Chiad were there. A familiar face would have been pleasant. Fael glided down the corridors like the grand lady she was, yet at every crossing hallway she looked both ways quickly. Plainly she did not want to be surprised by her father. Finally they reached a pair of doors, each carved with a lion, where two more maidens rose from squatting on their heels, and still more hand-talk flickered before the sandy-haired maiden went in without knocking. Perrin was wondering whether it was always like this around Rand now, Aiel guards and nobody speaking, when suddenly the doors were flung open and there was Rand in his shirt sleeves.
"Perrin! Fael! The lights shine on your wedding day!"
he laughed, kissing Fael lightly.
"I wish I could have been there for it."
She looked as confused as Perrin felt.
"How did you know?"
he exclaimed, and Rand laughed again, clapping him on the shoulder.
"Bode's here, Perrin. Bode and Jancy and all of them. In Camelin, anyway. And this is as far as Varen and Alana got them before they heard about the tower."
He looked tired, his eyes drawn, though his laughter did not sound it.
"Like, Perrin, the things they've told me you've been up to. Lord Perrin of the Two Rivers.
What does Mistress Luhan say to that?"
"She calls me Lord Perrin,"
Perrin muttered wryly. Elsbeth Luhan had smacked his bottom more often growing up than his mother had.
"She curtsies, Rand. She actually curtsies."
Fael eyed him askance. She said he embarrassed people when he tried to stop all the bowing and curtsying. As for his embarrassment when they did, she said it was part of the price he had to pay. The maiden who had gone in squeezed by Rand coming out, and he gave a start.
"Light, I'm keeping you in the door. Come in, come in. Larian, tell Sulin I need more punch, the melon, and tell her to hop."
For some reason, the three maidens laughed as if Rand had said something funny. One step inside the sitting room, a floral scent of perfume told Perrin there was another woman there before he saw her. When he did, he stared.
Men?
The hair in short curls, the embroidered blue coat and breeches were wrong, but the face was right.
Min, is it you?
Laughing, he caught her up in a hug.
We are gathering everybody, aren't we? Fail, this is Min. I told you about her.
That was when he realized what he was smelling from his wife, and put Min down while she was still grinning at him. Suddenly he was too much aware that those tight breeches showed the shape of Min's legs very well. Fail had very few faults, but she did have a slight tendency toward jealousy. He was not supposed to know she had chased Callie Coplin half a mile with a stick, as if he would ever look twice at another woman when he had her.
Fail, Min said, holding out her hands.
Any woman who can put up with this hairy lummox long enough to marry him has my admiration. I suppose he might make a good husband at that, once you housebreak him. Fael took Min's hands, smiling, but ooh, that acrid, bristly scent. I've not succeeded in housebreaking yet, Min, but I intend to keep him at least until I do.
Mistress Luhan curtsies?
Rand shook his head in disbelief.
I will have to see that to believe it.
Where's Loyal? Did he come? You didn't leave him outside.
He came, Perrin said, trying to keep an eye on Fael without being obvious. But not all the way, not yet. He said he was tired and needed a steading, so I told him one I know of, an abandoned one north of the road from Whitebridge, and he set off for it afoot. He said he would be able to feel it once he was within 10 miles or so.
I suppose you know Rand and Perrin very well, Fael asked,
and Min glanced at Rand.
For a while, anyway. I met them right after they first left the Two Rivers. They thought Berlon was a grand city.
On foot? Rand said.
Yes, Perrin said slowly. Fael's scent was changing, the thorny jealousy dwindling away. Why?
He would rather use his feet, you know. He bet me a gold crown he would be here in Camelin no more than 10 days after us.
The two women were looking at one another, Fael smiling and Min coloring slightly. Min smelled faintly embarrassed, Fael pleased. And surprised, though only a hint showed on her face.
I didn't want to take his coin. He has to go 50 miles or more out of his way, but he insisted. He wanted to make it 5 days.
Loyal always did say he could outrun a horse,
Rand laughed, but there had been a pause. Laughter faded.
I hope he makes it safely, he said more seriously.
He was tired, and different in other ways, too. The Rand Perrin had last seen in Tyr had not been soft, far from it. But this Rand made that one look an innocent farm boy. He did not blink often enough, as if a blink might hide what he needed to see. Perrin recognized something of that look. He had seen it on the faces of Two Rivers men after the Trolloc attacks. After the 5th, the 10th, when it seemed hope was gone, but you went on fighting because the cost of giving up was too great.
My lord dragon, Fael said, startling Perrin.
She had always called him Rand before, though they had been hearing the title since Whitebridge.
If you will forgive me, I will just have a word with my husband, then leave you two to talk.
She hardly waited for Rand's surprised assent to close on Perrin, turning him so her back was to Rand.
I will not go far, my dear heart. Min and I will have our own conversation about things that would very likely bore you.
Fussing with his lapels, she began speaking hurriedly under her breath, so softly that anyone except him would have had to strain their ears. She did recall his hearing sometimes.
Remember, he is not your boyhood friend any longer, Perrin. At least, not only that. He is the dragon reborn, the Lord Dragon. But you are the Lord of the Two Rivers. I know you will stand up for yourself and for the Two Rivers.
The smile she gave him was full of love and confidence. He wanted to kiss her right there.
There, she said in a normal tone. "You are all straight again." She no longer gave off the slightest scent of jealousy. Offering Rand a graceful curtsy and a murmur of, "My Lord Dragon," she held out a hand to Min. "Come, Min." Min's curtsy was considerably less practiced and made Rand start. Before they reached the doorway, one of the doors banged open, and a tall, liveried woman entered with a silver tray, holding goblets and a pitcher that gave off the smell of wine and honey melon juice. Perrin almost stared. Despite the red-and-white dress, she could have been Chiad's mother, or maybe grandmother with that short, curled white hair. Frowning at the departing women, she stalked to the nearest table and set down the tray, her face a mask of meekness that seemed frozen in place. "I was told four, my Lord Dragon," she said oddly. He thought she might be trying for humble respect, but had something caught in her throat. "So I brought for four." Her curtsy made Min's look elegant, and she slammed the door on her way out. Perrin looked at Rand. "Do you ever think women are strange?"
"Why are you asking me? You are the married man."
Rand filled a silver-chased goblet with punch and handed it to him.
"If you don't know, you'll have to ask Matt. I know less every day."
"So do I," Perrin sighed.
The punch was certainly cooling. Rand did not seem to be sweating at all.
"Where is Matt, anyway? If I had to guess, I would say in the nearest tavern, and odds or evens whether he had a dice cup in his hands or a girl on his knee."
"He had better have neither," Rand said grimly, setting down his punch untouched. "He is supposed to be bringing Elaine here to be crowned. And Egwene and Nynaeve, I hope. Like there's so much to do before she gets here." His head swung like a bear's at bay. Then he fixed on Perrin. "Would you go to Tyr for me?"
"Tyr? Rand, I've been over 2 months on the road. My bottom's taken on the shape of the saddle."
"I can have you there tonight. Today. You can sleep in a general's tent and stay away from saddles as long as you like."
Perrin stared at him. The man seemed serious. Suddenly he found himself wondering how Rand's sanity was holding. Light it had to hold, at least until Tarmon Gaydon. He took a long swallow of the punch to wash the bitter thought out of his mouth. What a way to think about a friend.
"Rand, if you could set me down in the Stone of Tyr right now, I would still say no. I have to talk to someone here in Camelon, and I'd like to see Bode and the others."
Rand did not seem to be listening. He flung himself into one of the gilded chairs and stared at Perrin bleakly.
"You remember how Tom used to juggle all those balls and make it look easy? Well, I'm juggling now for all I am worth, and it isn't easy. Samael and Ilion, the rest of the Forsaken, the light only knows where. Sometimes I don't even think they are the worst of it. Rebels who think I'm a false dragon, dragonsworn who think they can burn villages in my name. Have you heard of the Prophet, Perrin? No matter, he's no worse than the rest. I have allies who hate each other, and the best general I can name to face Ilion wants nothing better than to charge off and be killed. Elaine should be here in maybe a month and a half with luck, but I may just have a rebellion on my hands here before then. Light, I want to give her Ander whole. I thought of going to get her myself, but that is the worst thing I could do."
He rubbed his face with both hands, speaking behind them.
"The very worst. What does Moraine say?"
Rand's hands came down far enough for him to look over them.
"Moraine is dead, Perrin. She killed Lanfear and died. And that's an end of that."
Perrin sat down. Moraine? It did not seem possible.
"If Alana and Varen are here..."
He rolled the goblet between his palms. He could not really make himself trust either woman.
"Have you asked their advice?"
"No!"
Rand's hand slashed a sharp cutting gesture.
"They stay clear of me, Perrin.
I made that plain.
Perrin decided to ask Fael to find out what was going on for Milana or Varen. The two Aes Sedai often made him vaguely uneasy, but Fael seemed to get on well with them.
Rand, you know as well as I do it's dangerous to anger Aes Sedai. Moraine came looking for us, for you anyway, but there were times I thought she was ready to kill Matt, me, and you.
Rand said something, but at least he seemed to be listening, with his head tilted.
If a tenth of the stories I've been hearing ever since Berlon are even half true, this might be the worst possible time to have Aes Sedai angry with you. I don't pretend to know what's going on in the tower, but...
Rand gave himself a shake and leaned forward.
The tower's split right down the middle, Perrin. Half think I am a pig to buy at market, and the other half... I don't know what they think, exactly. 3 days in a row I've met some of their embassy. I'm supposed to meet again this afternoon, and I still cannot pin them down. They ask a sight more questions than they answer, and don't seem much pleased I won't give them any more answers than they give me. At least Elida, she is the new Amarlin, if you've not heard. At least her people say something, even if they do seem to think I'll be so impressed by Aes Sedai curtsying that I won't dig too deep.
Light, Perrin breathed. Light? You mean to say part of the Aes Sedai really have rebelled? And you've put yourself square between the tower and the rebels? Two bears ready to fight and you go picking cloudberries between them? Did you never think you might have enough trouble with Aes Sedai without that? I tell you true, Rand. Swan Sanche made my toes curl up in my boots, but at least you knew where you stood with her. She made me feel like I was a horse, and she was trying to decide whether I'd do for a long, hard ride, but at least she made it plain she didn't mean to saddle me herself.
Rand's laugh was too hoarse to hold any mirth.
Do you really think Aes Sedai would leave me alone just because I left them alone? Me? The tower splitting is the best thing that could have happened for me. They're too busy staring at one another to turn full attention on me. Without that, there'd be 20 Aes Sedai everywhere I turned. 50. I have Tyr and Cairhien behind me after a fashion, and a toehold here. Without the split, every time I opened my mouth, there'd be somebody saying, "Yes, but the Aes Sedai say..." Perrin, Moraine did her best to tie cords to me until I forced her to stop, and to tell truth, I'm not so sure she stopped then. When an Aes Sedai says she'll advise you and let you decide, she means she knows what you should do and will make you do it if she can.
Taking up his goblet, he drank deeply. When he lowered it, he seemed calmer.
If the tower was whole, I'd have so many strings tied to me by now, I could not move a finger without asking 6 Aes Sedai for permission.
Perrin very nearly laughed himself, and no more in mirth than Rand.
So you think it's better to... what? Play the rebel Aes Sedai off against the tower? Cheer the bull or cheer the bear? Cheer both, and you will be trampled and eaten.
Not that simple, Perrin. Though they don't know it, Rand said smugly, shaking his head.
There's a third side, ready to kneel to me. If they make contact again... Light. This isn't how we should be spending our first hour together again, talking about Aes Sedai. Emmons Field, Perrin!
His face softened almost to the Rand Perrin remembered, and he grinned eagerly. I only had a short time with Bode and the others, but they mentioned all kinds of changes. Tell me what's changed, Perrin. Tell me what's the same. For a long while they talked about the refugees and all the new things they had brought. New kinds of beans and squash, new varieties of pear and apple, the weaving of fine cloth and maybe carpets, making bricks and tiles, stonework and furniture more ornate than anything the Two Rivers had seen in a long time, if ever. Perrin had grown used to the sheer numbers of people who had come across the Mountains of Mist, but it seemed to stun Rand. The advantages and disadvantages of the wall some wanted to put around Emmons Field and the other villages were gone into in depth, and stone walls versus log.
At times Rand sounded his old self, laughing over how all the women had been so hard against Tarabanner or Damani dresses in the beginning, and now were divided into those who would wear nothing but good stout Two Rivers dresses, and those who had cut up all theirs for rags. Or over how a number of the younger men were growing mustaches like Tarabanner's or Damani, occasionally with an Almuth Plain goatee as well, which made the unwise wearer look as though a small animal had latched on under his nose. Perrin did not bother to add to that. Beards like his own were even more popular. It came as a shock, though, when Rand made it clear he had no intention of visiting the camp, though there were any number of men there he knew. "I can't protect you or Matt," he said softly, "but I can them." After that, the conversation naturally lagged until even Rand realized he had draped a blanket over it. Finally, he stood with a sigh, scrubbing his hands through his hair and looking around in a disgruntled way. "You must want to wash and rest, Perrin. I should not keep you from it. I'll have rooms set aside for you." Seeing Perrin to the door, he suddenly added, "You will think about Tyr, Perrin. I need you there. There is no danger involved. I will tell you the whole plan, if you decide to go. You'll be only the fourth man to know the real plan." Rand's face hardened. "You must keep that to yourself, Perrin. Don't tell even Fael." "I can hold my tongue," Perrin said stiffly, and a little sadly. The new Rand was back. "And I will think on Tyr." Chapter 46. Beyond the Gate. Perrin paid scant attention as Rand instructed a maiden, "Tell Sulin to prepare rooms for Perrin and Fael, and obey them as she would me." The two Aiel women took that as some sort of great joke from the way they laughed and slapped thighs, but Perrin was staring at a slender man, standing a little way down the tapestry-hung corridor. He had no doubt at all that the man was Davram Bashir. It was not just that he was Saldaean, and he surely looked nothing like Fael with those thick, gray-streaked mustaches curving down to almost hide his mouth. He was no taller than Fael either, maybe a little shorter. But the way he stood, arms folded, face like a hawk staring down into a henyard, made Perrin certain. The man knew. That was certain, too. Making last goodbyes to Rand, Perrin took a deep breath and walked up the hallway. He found himself wishing he had his axe. Bashir was wearing his sword. "Lord Bashir," Perrin made a bow that was not returned. The man reeked of cold fury. "I am Perrin Ebarra."
"We will talk,"
Bashir said curtly and turned on his heel. Perrin had no choice but to follow, and to take quick strides despite his longer legs. Two turnings later, Bashir entered a small sitting room and closed the door behind them. Tall windows let in plenty of light, and even more heat than the high ceiling could handle. Two chairs with padded seats and high, scroll-carved backs had been placed facing each other. A silver pitcher with a tall neck and two silver cups stood on a lapis-inlaid table. Not punch this time. Strong wine, by the smell. Bashir filled the cups and thrust one at Perrin, gesturing peremptorily to one of the chairs. He wore a smile behind his mustaches, but eyes and smile could have belonged to two different men. The eyes could have driven nails.
"I suppose Zareen told you all about my estates before you married her. All about the broken crown. She was always talkative as a girl."
The man remained standing, so Perrin did as well. Broken crown? Fael had certainly never mentioned any broken crown.
"First she told me you were a fur trader, or maybe it was a lumber merchant first, and then a fur trader. You sold ice peppers, too."
Bashir gave a start, repeating,
"Fur trader?"
incredulously under his breath.
"Her story changed," Perrin went on, but once too often she repeated something you had said about how a general should behave. And I asked her straight out, and—" He peered into his wine, then made himself meet the other man's eyes. "When I found out who you were, I almost changed my mind about marrying her. Only she had her mind set, and when Fail has her mind set, shifting her is like shifting a hitch of mules that have all decided to sit down at once. Besides, I loved her. I love her."
"Fail?" Bashir barked. "Who in the pit of doom is this Fail? We are talking about my daughter Zareen, and what you've done to her."
"Fail is the name she took when she became a hunter for the Horn," Perrin said patiently. He had to make a good impression on this man. Being at odds with your father-in-law was almost as bad as being at odds with your mother-in-law. "That was before she met me."
"A hunter?"
Pride shone in the man's voice and his sudden grin. The scent of anger almost vanished.
"The little minx never said a word to me about that. I must say Fail suits her better than Zareen. That was her mother's notion, and I—"
Suddenly he gave himself a shake, and Perrin a suspicious stare. Anger began scenting the air again.
"Don't try changing the subject, boy. What we are about is you and my daughter and this supposed marriage of yours."
"Supposed?" Perrin had always been good at holding his temper. Mistress Luhan said he never had one. "When you were bigger and stronger than the other boys growing up and might hurt somebody by accident, you learned to hold your temper." Right then, he was having a little difficulty, though. "The wisdom performed the ceremony, the same as everybody's been married in the Two Rivers since time out of mind."
"Boy, it wouldn't matter if you had the words said by an Ogier elder with six Aes Sedai standing witness. Zareen still isn't old enough to marry without her mother's permission, which she never asked, much less received. She is with Dira right now, and if she doesn't convince her mother she's old enough to be married, she goes back to the camp, probably doing duty as her mother's saddle. And you—"
Bashir's fingers stroked the hilt of his sword, though he did not seem aware of it.
"You," he said in an almost jolly tone, "I get to kill."
"Fail is mine," Perrin growled. Wine slopped over his wrist, and he looked down in surprise at the wine cup crushed in his fist. He set the twisted piece of silver on the table carefully, beside the pitcher, but he could do nothing about his voice.
"Nobody can take her from me. Nobody!
You take her back to your camp,
or anywhere, and I'll come for her."
"I have 9,000 men with me," the other man said in a surprisingly mild tone. "Are they harder to kill than Trollocs?"
"Try taking her. Try! And we'll find out."
He was shaking, Perrin realized, his hands clenched into fists so hard they hurt. It shocked him. He had not been angry, really angry in so long that he no longer remembered what it was like. Bashir studied him up and down and then shook his head.
"It might be a shame to kill you. We need some new blood. It's getting thin in the house. My grandfather used to say we were all becoming soft, and he was right. I'm half the man he was, and much as it shames me to say it, Zareen is terribly soft. Not weak, mind."
He frowned hard for a moment, nodding when he saw Perrin was not going to say Fail was weak.
"But soft, just the same."
And that shocked Perrin so, he sat down before he realized he had moved to the chair. He almost forgot to be angry. Was this man mad, changing about like that? And Fail, soft? She could be deliciously soft at times, true, but any man who thought she was soft, in the way her father meant, would probably have his head handed to him, himself included. Bashir picked up the crushed wine cup, studied it, then replaced it, and took the other chair.
"Zareen told me a good bit about you before she went with her mother.
All about Lord Perrin of the Two Rivers, Slayer of Trollocs. That's good, that. I like a man who can stand toe-to-toe with a Trolloc and not back up. Now I want to know what kind of man you are.
He waited expectantly, sipping his wine. Perrin wished he had some more of Rand's melon punch, or even his wine cup, undented. His throat had gone dry. He wanted to make that good impression, but he had to start with the truth.
The fact of it is, I am not really a lord. I'm a blacksmith. You see, when the Trollocs came...
He trailed off because Bashir was laughing so hard the man had to wipe his eyes.
Boy, the Creator never made the houses. Some forget it, but go far enough back in any house and you'll find a commoner who showed uncommon courage or kept his head and took charge when everybody else was running around like plucked geese. Mind you, another thing some like to forget is the road down can be just as sudden. I've two maids in Tyre, who would be ladies if their forebears, 200 years ago, hadn't been fools even a fool wouldn't follow. And a woodcutter in Sedona, who claims his ancestors were kings and queens before Otter Hawkwing. He might be telling the truth. He's a good woodcutter. As many roads down as up, and the roads down as slippery as the others.
Bashir snorted hard enough to make his mustaches stir.
A fool moans when fortune takes him down, and it takes a true fool to moan when fortune takes him up. What I want to know about you isn't what you were, or even so much what you are, as what you are inside. If my wife leaves Zareen with a whole hide and I don't kill you, do you know how to treat a wife? Well?
Mindful of that good impression, Perrin decided not to explain that he would much rather be a blacksmith again.
I treat Fael as well as I know how, he said carefully.
Bashir snorted again.
As well as you know how.
His flat tone became a growl.
You had better know well enough, boy, or I'll... You hear me? A wife isn't a trooper to go running when you shout. In some ways a wife is like a dove. You hold her half as hard as you think is necessary, or you might hurt her. You don't want to hurt, Zareen. You understand me?
He grinned suddenly, disconcertingly, and his voice grew almost friendly.
You might do very well for a son-in-law, Ibarra, but if you make her unhappy...
He was stroking his sword hilt again.
I try to make her happy, Perrin said seriously. Hurting her is the last thing I'd want to do. Good. Because it will be the last thing you do, boy.
That was delivered with a grin, too, but Perrin had no doubts Bashir meant every word.
I think it's time to take you to Deera. If she and Zareen haven't finished their discussion by now, best we step in before one of them kills the other. They always did get a little carried away when they argued, and Zareen's too big now for Deera to put an end to it by spanking her.
Bashir put his cup on the table and went on as they started for the door.
One thing you have to be aware of, just because a woman says she believes something doesn't mean it's true. Oh, she'll believe it, but a thing is not necessarily true just because a woman believes it is. You keep that in mind.
I will. Perrin thought he understood what the man meant. Fael sometimes had only a passing acquaintance with the truth. Never about anything important, or at least not what she considered important. But if she promised to do something she did not want to do, she always managed to leave herself a hole to wriggle through and keep the letter of the promise while doing exactly as she wished. What he did not understand was what that could have to do with meeting Fael's mother. It was a long walk through the palace, along colonnades and up flights of stairs. There did not seem to be many Saldaeans about, but a good many Aielmen and maidens, not to mention red and white liveried servants who bowed and curtsied, and white-robed men and women like those who had taken the horses. Those last scurried along with trays or armloads of toweling, eyes down, and seemed to take no notice of anyone.
With a start, Perrin realized that a number of them wore the same length of scarlet cloth around their temples that many of the Aielmen did. They must be Aiel, too. He noticed a small thing as well. As many women as men in the white robes wore the headband, and men in the drab coats and breeches, but no maidens that he saw. Gaul had told him a little about the Aiel, but he had never mentioned the headbands. As he and Bashir entered a room with ivory-inlaid chairs and small tables set on a patterned carpet of red and gold and green, Perrin's ears picked up the muffled sound of women's voices raised in an inner room. He could not make out words through the thick door, but he could tell that one of them was Fael. Abruptly there was a slap, followed almost immediately by another, and he winced. Only a complete woolhead stepped between his wife and her mother when they were arguing. By what he had seen, usually they both rounded on the poor fool. And he knew very well that Fael could stand up for herself in normal circumstances. But then again, he had seen strong women, themselves mothers and even grandmothers, allow themselves to be treated like children by their own mothers. Squaring his shoulders, he strode for the inner door, but Bashir was there before, rapping his knuckles as if they had all the time in the world. Of course, Bashir could not hear what sounded to Perrin like two cats in a sack. Wet cats. Bashir's rap cut off the snarling as though with a knife.
"You may come," a composed voice said loudly.
It was all Perrin could do not to push past Bashir, and once he was inside, his eyes sought out Fael anxiously, where she sat in a wide-armed chair, just where the light from the windows became less sharp. The carpet was mostly dark red in here, making him think of blood, and one of the two wall hangings showed a woman on horseback killing a leopard with a spear. The other was a furious battle swirling around a white lion banner. Her scent was a jumble of emotions he could not separate, and her left cheek bore a red handprint. But she smiled at him, if faintly. Fael's mother made Perrin blink. With all Bashir's talk of doves, he expected a fragile woman. But Lady Dira stood inches taller than her husband, and she was statuesque. Not big, like Mistress Luhan, who was round, or like Daes Conger, who looked as if she could take over a blacksmith's hammer. She was buxom, which a man certainly should not think of in his mother-in-law, and he could see where Fael got her beauty. Fael's face was her mother's face, without the slash of white through her dark hair on her temples. If that was how Fael would look when she reached that age, he was a very fortunate man. On the other hand, that bold nose gave Lady Dira the look of an eagle, as those dark tilted eyes fastened on him, a fiery-eyed eagle, ready to sink talons deep into a particularly insolent rabbit. She smelled of fury and contempt. The real surprise, though, was the crimson handprint on her cheek. "Father, we were just talking of you," Fael said with an affectionate smile, gliding to him and taking his hands. She kissed his cheeks, and Perrin felt a sudden stab of disgruntlement. A father did not deserve all that, when there was a husband standing right there with only one brief smile to sustain him.
"Should I ride away and hide then, Zareen?" Bashir chuckled.
Oh, a very rich chuckle. The man did not even seem to see that his wife and daughter had hit each other.
"She prefers Fael, Davram," Lady Dira said absently.
Arms folded beneath that ample bosom, she eyed Perrin up and down without any effort to disguise it. He heard Fael whisper softly to her father,
"It depends on him now."
Perrin supposed it did, if she and her mother had come to blows. Squaring his shoulders, he prepared to tell Lady Dira that he would be as gentle with Fael as if she were a kitten, that he himself would be meek as a lamb. The last part would be a lie, of course. Fael would spit a meek man and roast him for dinner, but peace had to be maintained. Besides, he did try to be gentle with her. Maybe the Lady Dira was why Bashir talked so about gentleness. No man would have the nerve to be anything else with this woman. Before he could open his mouth, Fael's mother said,
"Yellow eyes do not make a wolf."
Are you strong enough to handle my daughter, young man? From what she tells me, you're a milksop, indulging her every whim, letting her twine you around her fingers whenever she wants to play cat's cradle.
Perrin stared. Bashir had taken the chair Fael had been sitting in, and now he was complacently studying his boots, one propped atop the toe of the other. Fael, seated on the broad arm of her father's chair, gave her mother one indignant frown, then smiled at Perrin with all the confidence she had shown when telling him to stand up to Rand.
"I don't think she twists me around her finger," he said carefully.
She tried, true, but he did not think he had ever let her, except once in a while, to please her. Lady Dira's sniff spoke volumes.
"Weaklings never think so. A woman wants a strong man, stronger than she, here."
Her finger poked his chest hard enough to make him grunt.
"I'll never forget the first time Davram took me by the scruff of the neck and showed me he was the stronger of us. It was magnificent."
Perrin blinked. That was an image his mind could not hold.
"If a woman is stronger than her husband, she comes to despise him. She has the choice of either tyrannizing him or else making herself less, in order not to make him less. If the husband is strong enough, though," she poked him again, even harder, "she can be as strong as she is, as strong as she can grow to be. You will have to prove to Fael that you're strong."
Another poke, harder still.
"The women of my family are leopards. If you cannot train her to hunt on your command, Fael will rake you as you deserve. Are you strong enough?"
This time her finger drove Perrin back a step.
"Will you stop that?"
he growled. He refrained from rubbing his chest. Fael was giving no help at all, merely smiling at him encouragingly. Bashir was studying him with pursed lips and a cocked eyebrow.
"If I indulge her sometimes, it's because I want to. I like to see her smile. If you expect me to trample on her, you can forget it."
Maybe he had lost with that. Fael's mother began staring at him in a most peculiar way, and her scent was a tangle he could not make out, though anger was still in it, and icy disdain. But good impression or no, he was done with trying to say what Bashir and his wife wanted to hear.
"I love her, and she loves me, and that's the whole of it, as far as I'm concerned." "He says," Bashir said slowly, "that if you take our daughter away, he will take her back. He seems to think 9,000 Saldaean horse no match for a few hundred Two Rivers bowmen."
His wife gazed at Perrin consideringly, then visibly took herself in hand, her head coming erect.
"That is all very well, but any man can swing a sword. What I want to know is whether he can tame a willful, headstrong, disobedient—"
"Enough, Dira," Bashir cut in mildly. "Since you've obviously decided Zareen Fael is no longer a child, I think Perrin will do well enough."
To Perrin's surprise, Bashir's wife bowed her head meekly.
"As you say, my heart."
Then she glared at Perrin, not meekly at all, as if to say that was the way a man should handle a woman. Bashir murmured something under his breath about grandchildren and making the blood strong again. And Fael? She smiled at Perrin with an expression he had never seen on her face before, an expression that made him decidedly uncomfortable. With her hands folded and her ankles crossed and her head tilted to one side, she somehow managed to look submissive.
Fael?
Maybe he had married into a family where everyone was mad.
Closing the door on Perrin, Rand finished his goblet of punch, then sprawled in a chair, thinking. He hoped Perrin got on well with Bashir, but then if they struck sparks, maybe Perrin would be more amenable to Tyr.
He needed either Perrin or Map there to convince Samael that that was the true attack. The thought brought a soft, bitter laugh. Light, what a way to think about a friend. Luz Theron was giggling and muttering indistinctly about friends and betrayal. Rand wished he could sleep for a year.
Min entered without knocking or being announced, of course. The maidens sometimes looked at her oddly, but whatever Sulin had said, or maybe Mullane, Min was now on the short list of those sent on in, whatever he was doing. She took advantage, too. Once already she had insisted on taking a stool beside his bathtub and talking as if nothing were out of the ordinary at all. Now she just paused to fill herself a goblet of punch and dropped into his lap with a little bounce. A faint sheen of sweat glistened on her face. She would not even try to learn how to ignore the heat, just laughing and saying she was not Aes Sedai and had no plans to be. He had become her favorite chair for these visits, it seemed, but he was certain if he merely pretended not to notice, she would give up her game sooner or later. That was why he had hid as best he could in his bathwater instead of blindfolding her with air. Once she knew she was affecting him, she would never stop the joke. Besides, much as it shamed him to admit it about Min, having a girl on his knees did feel nice. He was not made of wood.
Did you have a good talk with Fael?
It didn't last long. Her father came and got her, and she was too busy flinging arms around his neck to notice me. I went for a little walk after.
You didn't like her, he said, and Min's eyes widened, her lashes making them look even larger. Women never expected a man to see or understand anything they did not want him to.
It isn't that I dislike her exactly, she said, drawing the words out. It's just, well, she wants what she wants when she wants it, and she will not take no for an answer. I pity poor Perrin married to her. Do you know what she wanted with me? To make sure I had no designs on her precious husband. You may not have noticed. Men never see these things. She cut off, looking up at him suspiciously through those long lashes. He had showed he could see some things, after all. Once she was satisfied he did not mean to laugh or bring it up, she went on. I could see at a glance he's besotted with her, the poor fool, and she with him, for all the good it will do him. I don't think he would even look twice at another woman, but she doesn't believe it. Not if the other woman looks first, anyway. He's found his falcon, and I wouldn't be surprised if she kills him when the hawk appears. Her breath caught, and she glanced up at him again, then busied herself drinking from the goblet. She would tell him what she meant if he asked. He remembered her as saying nothing of her viewings, unless they concerned him. But if that was so, she had changed for some reason. She would view anyone he asked now, and tell him everything she saw. Yet doing so made her uncomfortable.
"Shut up," he shouted at Luz Theron. "Go away, you're dead."
It had no effect. It often did not, now. That voice went on mumbling, maybe about being betrayed by friends, maybe about betraying them. "Did you see anything that concerns me?" he asked. With a grateful grin, Min settled companionably against his chest. Well, she probably meant it to be companionable. Or then again, very likely not. And began talking between sips of punch.
"When you two were together, I saw those fireflies and the darkness stronger than ever. I like Millen punch. But with the two of you in the same room, the fireflies were holding their own instead of being eaten faster than they can swarm, the way they do when you're alone. And something else I saw when you were together. Twice he's going to have to be there, or you..."
She peered into her goblet so he could not see her face.
"If he's not, something bad will happen to you."
Her voice sounded small and frightened.
"Very bad."
Much as he would have liked to know more, like when and where and what, she would have told him already had she known. "Then I'll just have to keep him around," he said, as cheerfully as he could. He did not like for Min to be frightened. I don't know that that will be enough, she mumbled into her punch. It will happen if he is not there, but nothing I saw said it won't because he is. It will be very bad, Rand. Just thinking of that viewing makes me...
He turned her face up and was surprised to see tears leaking from her eyes.
Min, I didn't know these viewings could hurt you, he said gently. I'm sorry. A flat lot, you know, sheepherder, she muttered.
Plucking a lace-edged handkerchief from her sleeve, she dabbed at her eyes.
It was just dust. You don't make Sewell and dust in here often enough.
The handkerchief went back with a flourish.
I should go back to the Crown of Roses. I just had to tell you what I saw about Perrin.
Min, be careful. Maybe you shouldn't come so often. I can't think Mirana would be easy on you if she discovered what you are doing.
Her grin looked very much her old self, and her eyes looked amused, even if they did still shine from the tears.
You let me worry about me, sheepherder. You think I am gawking at the sights of Camelin like every other country simpleton? If I didn't come every day, would you know they are meeting with the nobles?
She had glimpsed that by chance on her way to the palace yesterday, Mirana appearing for an instant at the window of a palace Min had learned belonged to Lord Pellavar. There was as much chance that Pellavar and his guests were the only ones as there was that Mirana had gone to clear Pellavar's drains.
You be careful, he told her firmly. I don't want you hurt, Min.
For a moment she studied him silently, then rose up enough to kiss him lightly on the lips. At least, well, it was light, but this was a daily ritual when she left, and he thought maybe those kisses were getting a little less light every day. Despite all his promises to himself, he said, I wish you wouldn't do that. Letting her sit on his knee was one thing, but kisses were carrying the joke too far.
No tears yet, farm boy? She smiled. No stammer?
Ruffling his hair as if he were 10, she walked to the door. But as she sometimes did, she moved in a gracefully swaying fashion that might not have produced tears and stammer, but certainly did make him stare, however hard he tried not to. His eyes whipped to her face as she turned around.
Why, sheepherder, your face is flushed. I thought the heat never touched you now. Never mind. I wanted to tell you... I will be careful. I'll see you tomorrow. Be sure to put on clean stockings.
Rand let out a long breath once the door was firmly shut behind her.
Clean stockings?
He put on clean every day. There were only two choices. He could keep pretending she was having no effect until she quit, or he could resign himself to stammering, or maybe to begging. She might stop if he begged, but then she would have that to tease him with.
And Min did like teasing.
The only other option, keeping their time together short, being cold and distant, was out of the question. She was a friend. He could as well have been cold toward... Avienda and Elaine were the names that came to mind, and they did not fit. Toward Matter Perrin... The only thing he did not understand was why he still felt so comfortable around her. He should not, with her taunting him in this way, but he did. Luz Theron's maundering had grown louder from the moment the Aes Sedai were mentioned, and now he said quite clearly,
If they are plotting with the nobles, I have to do something about them. Go away, Rand commanded. Nine are too dangerous, even untrained. Too dangerous. Can't allow them. No, oh no. Go away, Luz Theron.
I am not dead,
the voice howled.
I deserve death, but I am alive, alive, alive.
You are dead, Rand shouted back in his head. You are dead, Luz Theron.
The voice dwindled, still howling alive when it faded from hearing. Shaking, Rand got up and refilled his goblet, draining the punch in one long swallow. Sweat dripped from his face, and his shirt clung to him. Finding the concentration again was an effort.
Luz Theron was growing more persistent. One thing was certain. If Marana was plotting with the nobles, especially the nobles ready to declare rebellion, if he did not produce Elaine soon enough to satisfy them, then he did have to do something. Unfortunately, he had no idea what.
"Kill them," Luz Theron whispered. "Nigh, not too dangerous, but if I kill some, if I chase them away, kill them, make them fear me. I will not die again."
"I deserve death, but I want to live."
He began to weep, but the whispered rambling continued. Rand filled his goblet again and tried not to listen.
When the Oregon gate into the inner city came into sight, Demira Arif slowed. A number of men in the crowded street eyed her admiringly as they squeezed past, and for perhaps the thousandth time she made a note to stop wearing dresses from her native Ara Doman, and for the thousandth time promptly forgot it. Dresses were hardly important. She had been having the same six duplicated for years, and if a man who did not realize she was Aes Sedai became too impudent, it was always a simple matter to let him know who he was being saucy to. That got them out of her hair quickly enough, usually as fast as they could run. Right then, all she was interested in was the Oregon Gate, a great white marble arch in the gleaming white wall, the stream of people, carts, and wagons passing through it watched by a dozen Aiel men she suspected were not so desultory as they appeared at first glance. They might recognize an Aes Sedai on sight. Surprising people did sometimes. Besides, she had been followed from the Crown of Roses. Those coats and breeches made to fade into rock and brush stood out on a city street. So even had she wanted to enter the inner city, even had she been willing to risk Marana's wrath by entering without first asking Althor's permission, she would not have. How that did gall, Aes Sedai being required to ask a man's permission. All she wanted was a sight of one Milam Harnder, second librarian in the royal palace, and her agent for nearly 30 years. The library in the palace here could not compare with that in the White Tower, or the royal library in Carrion, or the Tirhana library in Bandar Aban, but she might as well wish to fly as for access to one of those. Still, if her message had reached Milam, he would have begun searching for the books she wanted. The palace library might well have some information about the seals on the Dark One's prison, perhaps even catalogued sources, though that might be too much to hope. Most libraries had volumes lying in corners that should have been recorded long ago, yet somehow had remained forgotten for 100 years, or 500, sometimes even more. Most libraries held treasures even the librarians did not suspect. She waited patiently, letting the crowd flow by her, attending only to the people coming out of the gate, but she did not see Milam's bald head and round face. At last she sighed. Plainly he had not received her message. If he had, he would have made whatever excuse was necessary to be there at the appointed time. She was going to have to wait on her turn to accompany Marana to the palace, and hope young Althor would give her permission again, to search in the library. Turning away from the gate, her eyes chanced to meet those of a tall, lean-faced fellow in a carter's vest who was gazing at her much too admiringly. When their eyes met, he winked. She was not going to put up with that all the way back to the inn. I really must remember to have some plain dresses made, she thought, wondering why she had never done it before. Luckily, she had been in Camelin before, some years ago, and Stevan would be waiting at the Crown of Roses, a beacon she could use to guide her if it came to that. She slipped into the narrow shaded gap between a cutler's shop and a tavern. The narrow alleyways of Camelin had been muddy the last time she was in them, but even dry, the deeper she went, the more unfortunate the smell. The walls were blank, with never a window and seldom a cramped door or narrow gate, and those with the look of not having been open in a long time. Scrawny cats peered at her silently from atop barrels and back walls, and stray dogs with knobby ribs laid back their ears, sometimes growling before they skulked off down a crossing run, as alleys were called here. She felt no worry about being scratched or bitten. Cats seemed to sense something about Aes Sedai. She had never heard of an Aes Sedai being scratched by even the most feral cat. Dogs were hostile, true, almost as if they thought Aes Sedai were cats, but they almost always slinked away after a little show. There were far more dogs and cats in the runs than she remembered, and gaunter, but many fewer people. She had not seen anyone at all before she rounded a corner to find 5 or 6 Aiel men coming toward her, laughing and talking among themselves. They seemed startled to see her. "Pardon, Aes Sedai," one of them muttered, and they all pressed against the side of the run, though there was plenty of room. Wondering if they were the same who had followed her, one of those faces looked familiar, that of a squat fellow with villainous eyes, she nodded and murmured thanks as she started past. The spear going into her side was such a shock she did not even cry out. Frantically she reached for Sidar, but something else pierced her side and she was down in the dust. That remembered face was thrust into hers, black eyes mocking, growling something she ignored as she tried to reach Sidar, tried to... Darkness closed in.
When Perrin and Fael finally left the interminable interview with her parents, that odd-serving woman Sulin was waiting for them in the hallway. Sweat drenched Perrin, making dark patches on his coat, and he felt as if he had run 10 miles while being pummeled every stride. Fael had a smile on her face and a spring in her step. She looked radiant, beautiful, and as proud of herself as when she brought the Watch Hill men just as the Trollocs were about to overrun Emmons Field. Sulin curtsied every time one of them looked at her, nearly falling over every single time. That leathery face with its scar down her cheek was fixed in an obsequious smile that seemed ready to shatter at a breath. Passing maidens flashed hand-talk at one another, and Sulin curtsied to them as well, though grinding her teeth loud enough for Perrin to hear clearly. Even Fael began to eye her warily. Once the woman led them to their rooms, a sitting room and a bedchamber with a canopied bed big enough for 10, and a long marble balcony overlooking a fountained courtyard, she insisted on explaining or showing them everything, even what they could see. Their horses had been stabled and curried, their saddlebags were unpacked and hung in the wardrobe with Perrin's axe belt, most of the scant contents laid in the drawers of a chest-on-chest in a precise array. Perrin's axe was propped beside the gray marble fireplace, as though to chop kindling. One of the 2 silver pitchers, glistening with condensation, held cool tea, flavored with mint, the other plum punch. 2 gilt-frame mirrors on the wall were pointed out and touched, one over a table where Fael's ivory comb and brush were laid, and a great stand mirror with carved uprights that a blind man could not have missed. While Sulin was still explaining about bathwater being brought and copper tubs, Perrin pressed a gold crown into her calloused palm. "Thank you," he said, "but if you will leave us now..." For a moment he thought she was going to throw the fat coin at him, but instead he got another wavering curtsy and a slammed door as she departed.
"I suppose whoever trains the servants doesn't know her job," Fael said. "That was very good, by the way. Polite, but firm. If you would only do that with our servants."
As she turned her slim back, her voice dropped to a murmur.
"Will you unbutton me?"
He always felt very thick-fingered undoing her small buttons, half afraid he was going to pop them off or tear her dress. On the other hand, he did enjoy undressing his wife. She usually had a maid do it, because of lost buttons, he was sure.
"Did you mean any of that nonsense you told your mother?"
"Have you not tamed me, my husband?" she said without looking at him, "and taught me to perch on your wrist when you call? Do I not run to please you? Am I not obedient to your smallest gesture?"
She smelled amused. She certainly sounded amused. The only thing was, she sounded as if she meant it, too. The same as when she told her mother practically the same thing, head high and as proud as she could be. Women were strange, that was all there was to it. And her mother, for that matter, her father. Maybe he could change the subject.
What was that Bashir had mentioned?
"Fael, what is the broken crown?"
He was sure that had been it. She made a vexed noise and suddenly began to smell upset. Randy's gone from the palace, Perrin.
And if he is?
Bending to peer at a tiny mother-of-pearl button, he frowned at her back.
How do you know?
The maidens. Bane and Chia taught me some of their hand talk. Don't let on, Perrin. From the way they behaved when they heard there were Aiel here, I think maybe they shouldn't have. Besides, it might be good to understand what the maidens are saying without them knowing it. They seem thick around Rand.
She twisted around to give him a roguish look and stroke his beard.
Those first maidens we met thought you have nice shoulders, but they did not think much of this. Aiel women do not know a good beard when they see one.
Shaking his head, he waited until she turned again, then pocketed the button that had come off when she twisted. Maybe she would not notice. He had gone a week with a button missing from his coat, and had not known until she pointed it out. As for beards, from what Gaul said, Aiel always shaved clean. Bane and Chiat had thought his beard a subject for odd jokes. He had thought of shaving himself more than once in this heat, but Fael did like the beard.
What about Rand?
Why should it matter if he's left the palace?
Just that you should know what he's doing behind your back. Obviously, you didn't know he was going off. Remember, he is the Dragon Reborn. That is very like a king of kings. And kings sometimes use up even friends, by accident and on purpose.
Rand wouldn't do that. What are you suggesting, anyway, that I spy on him?
He meant it as a joke, but she said, Not you, my love. Spying is a wife's work.
Fael!
Straightening so fast he nearly yanked another button loose, he took her shoulders and turned her to face him.
You are not going to spy on Rand, do you hear me?
She put on a dogged look, mouth drawing down, eyes narrowing. She practically reeked of stubbornness, but he could be dogged too.
Fael, I want to see some of that obedience you were boasting about.
As far as he could see, she did what he said, when she good and well pleased, and otherwise not, and forget whether he was in the right or not.
I mean it, Fael. I want your promise. I'll be no part of any...
I promise, my heart, she said, placing her fingers over his mouth. I promise I will not spy on Rand. You see, I am obedient to my lord husband. Do you remember how many grandchildren my mother said she expects?
The sudden change of direction made him blink. But she had promised. That was the important thing.
6, I think. I lost count when she started telling us which were to be boys and which girls.
Lady Dira had had some startlingly frank advice on how this was to be achieved. Thankfully, he had missed most of it, from wondering whether he should leave the room till she finished. Fael had just nodded away, as though it was the most natural thing in the world, with her husband and her father there.
At least 6, she said, with a truly wicked grin. Perrin, she will be looking over our shoulders unless I can tell her she can expect the first soon. And I thought, if you ever managed to undo the rest of my buttons...
After months of marriage, she still blushed, but that grin never faded.
The presence of a real bed after so many weeks makes me forward as a farm girl at harvest.
Sometimes he wondered about these Saldae and farm girls she was always bringing up. Blushes or no blushes, if they were as forward as Fael when he and she were alone, no crops would ever be harvested in Saldaea. He broke off 2 more buttons, getting her dress undone, and she did not mind a bit. She actually managed to tear his shirt.
Demira was surprised to open her eyes, surprised to find herself lying on the bed in her own room in the Crown of Roses. She expected to be dead, not undressed and tucked under a linen sheet. Stevan was sitting on a stool at the foot of her bed, managing to look relieved, concerned, and stern all at the same time. Her slender Kyrian and warder was a head shorter than she and nearly 20 years younger for all the gray streaking his temples, but sometimes he tried to behave like a father, all but claiming she could not take care of herself without him holding her hand. She very much feared this incident would give him the high ground in that struggle for months to come. Marana was on one side of the bed looking grave, Berenicia on the other. The plump yellow sister always looked grave, but now she looked absolutely somber. How? Demira managed. Light, but she felt weak. Healing did that, but putting her arms outside the sheet was an effort. She must have been very close to death. Healing left no scars, but memories and weakness were quite enough. A man came into the common room, Stevan said, claiming he wanted some ale. He said he had seen Aiel following an Aes Sedai. He described you exactly, and saying they were going to kill her. As soon as he spoke, I felt... He grimaced bleakly. Stevan asked me to come, Berenicia said. He all but dragged me, and we ran the whole way. Truth, I was not certain we were in time until you opened your eyes just now. Of course, Marana said in a flat voice. It was all part of the same trap, the same warning, the Aiel and the man. A pity we let him get away, but we were so concerned over you that he managed to slip off before anyone thought to hold him. Demira had been thinking about Milam and how this was going to affect the search in the library, about how long it was going to take Stevan to calm down, and what Marana was saying did not really penetrate until the last. Hold him? A warning? What are you talking about, Marana? Berenicia muttered something about her understanding if they showed it to her in a book. Berenicia had an acid tongue at times. Have you seen anyone come into the common room for a drink since we arrived, Demira? Marana asked patiently. It was true. She had not. One or even two Aes Sedai made little difference to an inn's custom in Camelin, but nine was another matter. Mistress Sinchonine had remarked on it openly of late. Then it was intended you should know Aiel had killed me, or maybe that I was to be found before I died. She had just recalled what that villainous-faced fellow had growled at her. I was told to tell you all to stay away from Althor. Exact words, tell the other witches to stay away from the dragon reborn. I could hardly deliver that message dead, could I? How were my wounds placed? Stevan shifted on his stool, darting a pained look at her. Both missed any organ that would have killed you on the spot, but the amount of blood you lost. What are we to do now? Demira cut in, directing her question to Marana, before he could start in on how foolish she had been to let herself be caught that way. I say we should find the Aiel responsible, Berenicia said firmly, and make an example of them. She came from the border marches of Shinar, and Aiel raids had been a feature of her growing up. Cianid agrees with me. Oh, no, Demira protested. I will not have my first chance to study the Aiel ruined. They'll hardly say two words as it is. It was my blood, after all. Besides, unless the man who gave you warning was Aiel, too, it seems obvious to me that they acted under orders, and I think there is only one man in Camelin who orders Aiel. The rest of us, Marana said, eyeing Berenicia firmly, agree with you, Demira. I want to hear no more talk of wasting time and energy finding one pack of hounds among hundreds, while the man who set them to hunt walks about grinning. Berenicia bristled a little before bowing her head, but she always did. We must at least show Althor he cannot treat Aes Sedai in this fashion, Berenicia said sharply. A glance from Marana moderated her tone, though she did not sound happy. Yet not so sharply that it ruins everything we've planned, of course. Demira steepled her fingers against her lips and sighed. She did feel weak. A thought occurs to me. If we charge him openly with what he's done, he will deny it, of course, and we have no proof to fling in his face. Not only that, it might be wise to let it be learned that he feels free to hunt Aes Sedai like rabbits. Marana and Berenicia exchanged glances and nodded quite firmly. Poor Stefan frowned furiously. He had never let anyone walk away from hurting her. Might it not be better to say nothing? That will certainly make him ponder and sweat. Why haven't we said anything? What are we going to do? I don't know how much we can do, but we can at least make him look over his shoulder. A valid point, Verin said from the doorway. Althor has to respect Aes Sedai, or there will be no working with him. She motioned Stefan to leave. He waited for Demira's nod, of course, then took his stool. I thought since you were the target... She frowned at Mirana and Berenicia. Will you sit down? I do not mean to get a crick in my neck staring up at you. Verin went on while they were still placing the room's only chair and a second stool beside the bed. Since you were the target, Demira, you should help decide how Master Althor is to be taught his lesson, and you seem to have made a beginning already. What I think, Mirana began, but Verin cut her off. In a moment, Mirana. Demira has the right to first suggestions. Demira's breath caught as she waited for the explosion. Mirana always seemed to want her decisions approved by Verin, which was natural enough under the circumstances, if awkward, but this was the first time Verin had simply taken charge, in front of others at least. Yet all Mirana did was stare at Verin for a moment, lips compressed, and then bow her head. Demira wondered whether this meant Mirana was going to resign the embassy to Verin. There did not seem anything else she could do now. All eyes turned to Demira, waiting. Verin's were particularly penetrating. If we want him to worry over what we intend to do, I suggest no one go to the palace today. Perhaps without any explanation, or if that is too strong, with one he must see through. Mirana nodded. More importantly, as things were turning out, Verin did as well. Demira decided to venture a little more. Maybe we should send no one for several days to let him stew. I'm sure watching Min will tell us when he is nicely on the boil, and... Whatever they decided to do, she wanted to be part of it. It had been her blood, after all, and the light only knew how long she would have to put off her researches in the library now. That last was almost as much a reason to teach Althor his lesson as his forgetting who Aes Sedai were.
Chapter 47 The Wandering Woman. Matt wanted a quiet ride to Epidar, and he got one, in a way. But traveling with six women, four of them Aes Sedai, he had plenty of irritations. They reached the distant forest that first day, with the sun still fairly well up in the sky, and rode several hours beneath a high canopy of mostly bare branches with dead leaves and dry branches crunching under the horses' hooves, until making camp near a dwindling stream just before sunset. Lantern-jawed Harnan, the file leader with the hawk tattooed on his cheek, saw to getting the troopers from the band settled, the horses curried and hobbled, sentries set and fires lit. Nerim and Lopin bustled about moaning over not having brought tents, and how was a man to know they would be spending nights on the ground when his master said nothing, and if his master caught his death of something, it was not his fault. Skinny and stout, they managed to sound like echoes. Vannin took care of himself, of course, though he did keep an eye on Alvar, and even curried the parts of wind that the boy could not reach, even using his saddle for a stool. Everybody took care of Alvar. The women shared the camp, but in a way their area was as separate as if it had been 50 paces away. An invisible line seemed to split the campsite in half, with invisible signs telling the troopers not to cross. Nynaeve and Elaine and the two white-haired women gathered around their own fire with Avienda and the golden-haired hunter, rarely even glancing toward where Matt and his men were laying out their blankets. The murmured conversation Matt heard, as much as he could make out, had to do with Van Deen and Natalius's concern that Avienda meant to lead her horse all the way to Abadar instead of riding. Tom tried to get a word in with Elaine and received an absent pat on the cheek, of all things, before he was sent back to sit with Julin and Jame, the stringy old warder who belonged to Van Deen, and seemed to spend all of his time sharpening his sword. Matt had no objection to the women staying apart. A tension he could not understand hung around them. At least, it did around Nynaeve and Elaine, and the hunters seemed to be infected, too. They sometimes stared at the Aes Sedai, the other Aes Sedai. He was not sure he would ever become used to thinking of Nynaeve and Elaine that way. A bit too intently, though Van Deen and Adelais appeared as oblivious as Avienda. Whatever the reason, Matt wanted no part of it. It smelled like an argument burning to leap out, and whether it burst into flame or smoldered underground, a wise man stepped wide of women's arguments. Medallion or no medallion, a wise man stepped very wide if the women were Aes Sedai. A small irritant, that, and so was the next, which was his own fault. Food. The smell of lamb and some sort of soup quickly wafted from the Aes Sedai's fire. Expecting a quick arrival in Ebudar, he had said nothing about food to Vannin and the others, which meant they had a little dried meat and hard cakes of flatbread in their saddlebags. Matt had hardly seen a bird or squirrel, let alone sign of a deer, so hunting was out of the question. When Nerim set up a small folding table and stool for Matt, Lopin was putting up another for Nalesian, Matt told him to share out what he had tucked away in the pack horse's panniers. The result was not as good as he hoped. Nerim stood by Matt's table, pouring water from a silver pitcher as if it were wine, and mournfully watching delicacies vanish down the trooper's gullets.
"Pickled quail eggs, my lord," he would announce in a funereal tone. "They would have gone